see Kumiko and talk to her, alone. If she can convince me it's what she wants, then I will give her a divorce. Only then will I agree to it. I turned towards the kitchen window and looked at the dark, rain-filled sky, stretching away into the distance. It had been raining for 4 straight days, into a wet, black world. Kumiko and I talked everything over before we decided to get married, and if we are going to end that marriage, I want to do it the same way. Kumiko's father and I went on making parallel statements, arriving nowhere, or nowhere fruitful, at least. Several questions remained unanswered. Did Kumiko really want to divorce me, and had she asked her parents to try to convince me to go along with it?
Kumiko says she doesn't want to see you.
Her father had told me, exactly as her brother, Noboru Wataya, had said. This was probably not an out-and-out lie. Kumiko's parents were not above interpreting things in a manner convenient to themselves, but as far as I knew, they were not the sort to manufacture facts out of nothing. They were, for better or worse, realistic people. If what her father had said was true, then was Kumiko now being sheltered by them? But that I found impossible to believe. Love was simply not an emotion that Kumiko had felt for her parents and brother from the time she was a little girl. She'd struggled for years to keep herself independent of them. It could well be that Kumiko had chosen to leave me because she had taken a lover. Even if I could not accept the explanation she had given me in her letter, I knew that it was not out of the question. But what I could not accept was that Kumiko should have gone straight from me to them or to some place they had prepared for her, and that she should be communicating with me through them. The more I thought about it, the less I understood. One possibility was that Kumiko had experienced an emotional breakdown and could no longer look after herself. Another was that she was being held against her will. I spent several days arranging and rearranging a variety of facts and words and memories until I had to give up thinking. Speculation was getting me nowhere. Autumn was drawing to a close, and a touch of winter hung in the air. As I always did at that season, I raked the dead leaves in the garden and stuffed them into plastic bags. I set a ladder against the roof and cleaned the leaves out of the gutters. The little garden of the house I lived in had no trees, but the wind carried leaves in abundance from the broad-spreading deciduous trees in the gardens on both sides. I didn't mind the work. The time would pass as I watched the withered leaves floating down in the afternoon sunshine. One big tree in the neighbors to the right put out bright red berries. Flocks of birds would perch there and chirp as if in competition with each other. These were brightly colored birds, with short, sharp cries that stabbed the air. I wondered about how best to store Kumiko's summer clothes. I could do as she had said in her letter and get rid of them. But I remembered the care that she had given to each item, and it was not as if I had no place to keep them. I decided to leave them for the time being where they were. Still, whenever I opened the wardrobe, I was confronted by Kumiko's absence. The dresses hanging there were the husks of something that had once existed. I knew how she looked in these clothes, and to some of them were attached specific memories. I would find myself sitting on the edge of the bed, staring at the rows of dresses or blouses or skirts. I would have no idea how long I'd been sitting there. It could have been 10 minutes or an hour. Sometimes, as I sat staring at a dress, I would imagine a man I didn't know helping Kumiko out of it. His hands would slip the dress off, then go on to remove the underwear beneath. They would caress her breasts and press her thighs apart. I could see those breasts and thighs in all their white softness, and the other man's hands touching them. I didn't want to think about such things, but I had no choice. They had probably happened in reality. I had to get used to such images. I couldn't just shove reality aside. Now and then I would recall the night I slept with Krita Kano, but the memory of it was vague. I held her in my arms that night and joined my body with hers any number of times. That was an undeniable fact. But as the weeks passed by, the feeling of certainty began to disappear. I couldn't bring back concrete images of her body, or of the ways in which it had joined with mine. If anything, the memories of what I had done with her earlier in my mind in unreality were far more vivid than the memories of the reality of that night. The image of her mounted on me, wearing Kumiko's blue dress in that strange hotel room, came back to me over and over again with amazing clarity.